into the fellowship. And the minute somebody puts a recorder on, I shut up. I now have to amend my script so I'm not dragged through the courts. Right. Relationships not only deepen but strengthen us, help us to be open to others who are also being drawn to the fellowship. And it's effective, not perfect, because we're trying to be effective in our mission and in our ministry and trying to be effective as we grow in Jesus and his kingdom, because we want to live out God's kingdom through every aspect of our lives and our lives together as a church family. So to that end, our values and our guidance is taken from Scripture and from the leading of the Holy Spirit. The first talk in this series revealed to me that in the delivery, certainly, just how much we are influenced by our own cultures. I spoke very much out of a west of Scotland, growing up in the west of Scotland, in a sort of industrial working sort of background. And it's obvious that there are differences in culture, then certainly in outlook. And even coming from a small town in the west, in Ayrshire, I could see there were even differences within a small community in a small country such as this. Because my late wife Margaret came from a very different culture and background. So kingdom really matters and presents a challenge to our various cultures and asks us to maybe even set aside some of our cultural outlooks and our subcultures to think kingdom and kingdom in all things. Because we are, if nothing else, becoming a multicultural church, a multicultural fellowship, quite unique in that. And finally, by way of introduction, these talks came out of prophecies received by the church during earlier times of prayer and fasting. The words from the Lord were a call to go deeper in intimacy with him and with each other. And he also revealed that some marriages may be experiencing some difficulty. So in a way, these talks are a response to that prophetic word, looking to find a strategy, perhaps, that we can step into God's call to go deeper in intimacy with him and with each other and to try and heal relationships and marriage. They're not intended to resolve difficulties. There are various ministry options around the church family for that. And one honest opinion the last time was that this is too superficial. It wasn't going deep enough, or it wasn't going specific enough, but I'm quite clear it's not designed to do that. It's just simply first thoughts, some thinking, some ideas, some personal experience, and we can think about it, we can share about it, and then there are many ways to go a bit deeper and to take it a bit deeper beyond this. So that's a sort of introduction of roughly where we are and what we're doing. I'm going to divert slightly from my script because a couple of weeks back there was an evening service at the Elam, which Kenny promoted, and the speaker was in from an organisation called Love Wales. He's based in Wales, doing a lot of ministry and mission in Wales. The speaker was, in a previous life, if you like, Elam pastor in Aberdeen, and he was Kenny's pastor about 30 or so years ago. Anyway, he was the speaker and found his talk was talking about similar things to this. I'm going to just share a few thoughts about that. His text was from Revelation 2 verse 4 and the letters, these letters to the churches, and particularly the letter to the church in Ephesus. But his main text was from verse 4 and 5. Jesus speaking to the church at Ephesus, "Yet I hold this against you. You have forsaken your first love. Remember the height from which you have fallen. Repent and do the things you did at first. If you do not repent, I will come to you and remove your lampstand from its place. And the speaker invited us to think about first love, about how we met, perhaps met someone and fell in love with them and got married, or perhaps we met people in our life that we really were in love with, but it didn't lead to marriage. But remember that first love, that sort of feeling that goes around that. And he kept repeating this phrase. It was so easy. Everything was easy. Because he recalled things like trying to buy a birthday card for them. Well, you buy the padded and flowers and £5 for a birthday card, no problem, it's easy. I love this person. They want me to go to this particular outing. I'm not interested in it, but it's them, it's the love of my life. It's easy, I'm going. And it was easy. And he says, remember that. Remember your first love and how you're caught up in that. But remember also when you came to faith and how church life was so easy. You were out handing out tracts every weekend. You were out doing missions. You were volunteering for everything. He remembers that there was a gathering of money for a particular project. He just got his student grant in. He gave it all away because it was easy. I was in love with Jesus. It was amazing. It was incredible. His pastor needed a car. Just give him the keys to the car. Let him drive around in your car. It's easy. It's love. It's wonderful. Love Jesus. But he said then, think about when it becomes less easy. Mm-hmm. He described it like running a race and you get a stitch in your side, or you run out of air, or you have to get your second wind or even your third wind because maybe a gap has opened up and you're falling behind or you're finding it hard to keep up. But you also find that in relationships, he says, that without really noticing, a little gap can open up and it stops becoming easy. It's like getting a stitch in your side and you've got to deal with that and get your second wind and close the gap and get back to, if not an easy place, in the place of love again. Got to get back to your first love in the church at Ephesus, and these other churches had fallen away from that. So he said it applies to relationships. If we allow gaps to open up, if we get to that point where it's not perhaps so easy because it's just the give and take of life and it becomes a bit more difficult. So it's not so easy. And we have to really work at it and we have to close the gap. But he also said it happens in church life. Mm-hmm. And he says, how does that happen and why does it happen? Well, not so much why does it happen, but in what ways can it happen? He says, well, in his 40 plus years of ministry, you find some people like to go to church because of the praise list and the praise band or the worship. And that's really what's sustaining them and that's what they're loving. Others go for the fellowship and just being around people. Others go for the ministry of the word, and having the word taught to them. And others go for the fellowship afterwards, and the teas and the coffees and the lunches and all of these things. They say, yes, they're important, they're a crucial part of church life. But he wonders if the first love should be Jesus. Mm-hmm. And fellowships need to address that, that there's a gap opening up when going for the worship is the main thing, or going for the social afterwards, or going for just the teaching and not bringing in the whole package. And so he says, church life sometimes doesn't become easy because we allow a gap to open up, because we lose our first love, we forget our first love, we fall away from our first love. Like Ephesus, you're forsaking your first love, Jesus. And unless church keeps Jesus the main thing, ministry doesn't become easy, ministry becomes difficult. And ministry becomes a challenge. So his whole talk was around these themes. And I thought, well, that's about kingdom and relationships and marriage and church life and all of these things. And I particularly liked when he was describing love at first and marriage at first when it was so easy. And yeah, it was. It was incredibly easy. And then you come to the sticking point where it's got to be maybe worked on a bit, and you've got to take stock of it, and you've got to maybe try a bit harder and close the gap if there's a gap, and really think about these things. But yes, I can see how it also applies to church life, mm-hmm. and how easy a fellowship can just lose its way. These churches that Jesus speaks to in the Revelation, they've all lost their way. And he's calling them all in one way or another to get back to the first love. They had so much going for them, so much to commend them, and yet they lost their way. So I thought that was relevant to what we're doing about kingdom and relationships. And it's almost like that prophetic word, or these several prophetic words that we got about intimacy and drawing closer to Jesus and closer to each other. It's essentially a prophetic word again, I think, coming back to us through that speaker a couple of weeks ago. So I just thought I would throw that in as a complete ad lib. Remember your first love and don't allow the gap to open. I'd always keep Jesus the main thing and the kingdom the main thing. So that's just a wee ad lib from a few weeks ago. So moving on. So in our first talk, we looked at some foundational things, such as God's intention for Christian marriage to reflect the relationship between Christ and his church. That emphasised the idea of leaving and cleaving. Leaving the family home, cleaving together and forming a new unit and a new home and a new identity as one couple in marriage. Setting aside previous family and household connections to come together to be one, to be a new household as husband and wife. Or as a single person starting their own home and carving their own identity and managing their own affairs. As part of our thoughts, we reflected on our throwaway society today, where there's a trend to see marriage as even time-dated and relationships from which you can grow out of and move on and get a new relationship, perhaps for a time, and then move on again. In deepening the relationship, it's important, we also felt, to take time to talk and to really listen, to effectively communicate. And we thought a wee bit about good communication. And not just getting words and facts across, but listening for the emotion and listening for what was really being said. And perhaps not immediately jumping to problem-solving mode, but to just engage with the emotion and affirm the emotion and listen to the emotion and then try to build from there. And we did reflect also that the matter of reading and understanding emotions is something many of us find it difficult to do. I think it was said that we lack vocabulary for such communication. We're not quite sure how to express emotion or respond to emotion. So maybe in a later talk we'll maybe think about that. We also reflected on making and protecting time for each other and to care for the guard times together as well as times apart, especially times apart when they're extended. It's like that speaker was saying a few weeks ago, don't let gaps open up. So in communication, we thought it'd be effective listening. As much as good communication, it's important to listen. And we reflected on not in front of the children in terms of important matters, stresses and strains and difficulties and challenges and conversations which we should not be passing on to our children. They should be oblivious of it. So that's roughly the story so far. Tonight I want to go back to that idea of leaving and cleaving. In that sense, we have sometimes in the marriage service we say, and forsaking all others. And it just sounds like nice words you would say in a marriage service, forsaking all others. But it's actually part of the leaving and the cleaving. All relationships have to change from that point on. The priority now is the other person, your husband or your wife, and the marriage. So in that sense, others have to be forsaken or having to be given a different priority. And that's not easy. But it's all part of this leaving and cleaving. Bride and groom leaving their parental home, or a young person stepping out on their own to set up their own home, making a new home, a couple together as one, or as a young person finding their way in the world. Sometimes, though, that process of separating out, coming together, and being one is not as straightforward as it may seem, because life is complicated, and we're not walking away from family ties and ties of friendship and relationships. We're just trying to negotiate a way of seeing them and relating to them in a different way. And that's not easy, and that takes time to work on. After all, the parental home, the parents remain and are part of the new life going forward as a married couple. The wider circle of relatives also remain, as do many, many friendships and social circles. So our question to think about is, how do we interact in these relationships and connections while operating as one unit? How do you protect the marriage and prioritise the marriage when all these relationships are round about? Margaret and I bumped into that within about 6 months of marriage. We were planning ahead for summer holidays, and we just had made a booking for a holiday in Scotland, and we went and shared with my parents about this. We obviously let her mother know as well, but sharing with my parents, I don't know what it was, something to do with them and how they understood things and the fact that they perhaps hadn't separated out as much as we thought they had. But anyway, the long story short, and it's a longish, complicated story, but the short version of it is they immediately assumed that they were going on holiday with us. Exactly, oh no. And how'd you get out of that one? Now, to our credit, and I think it's to our credit, we didn't react. We just didn't say very much at all, really. We just sucked it up and got on with life. And we went away and we thought about it and we talked about it. And again, very long story short, we agreed, okay, we'll take them on holiday. And since we're off for a few weeks anyway, we're absolutely going away together afterwards, and we're not telling them. We'll have this holiday with them, and then we're off. We're not going. So that was difficult. It got slightly more difficult because they thought we were treating them to a holiday, so they didn't pay for the holiday, and they didn't meet any expenses on holiday. And Margaret got a wee bit upset about this and a wee bit grumpy, and they're your parents. And, no, no, they're our parents.
We went every year on holiday with my grandparents.
Oh.
Every single year we went on holiday all together.
Wow.
After my uncle was killed from when I was 8 years old.
Mm.
So it was a norm.
Yeah. For some families it is, yes, I understand that. And, for us it caused a bit of turbulence, it caused a bit of difficulty. And we'll come back to another issue with my parents shortly. I think the journey into and through marriage is not simply a journey from dependence on your parents to independence, but it's also eventually dealing with our parents becoming dependent on us. So it's not dependence to independence. It can, for many families and many single people, a journey back towards some kind of dependence. Though the relationship changes, you become the grown-up and they become the people that need care or support or help for. And that often happens when you're at a time when you're on that exciting, loving journey of getting to know each other, or as a single person finding your feet in your own home, or negotiating a space within the family home, it can be very difficult that you realise we're not independent. They have expectations such as that first holiday we had, but also that they needed more help and more care. And by 2 years into our marriage, that's what came about. My mother was a stroke victim. She had various health issues. My dad had various health issues and had stopped work early. And they were gradually becoming dependent on us, looking after them. So what Margaret and I, and there was no care in the community in those days, and no backup and support. There was us. There was the GP, and there were some district nurses. That was it. Now, we got them into a different house by this time, a ground floor flat, easier for them to manage. But with Mum and Christy becoming unwell, and my dad not really being fit to look after her, we realised we had a dependency problem here and they needed more care. So, yeah, we did think about it, but without planning or really going into it too deeply, it just sort of happened. We made this deal with them, like we'll come around, or one of us will come around about tea time and make sure your evening meal's okay and things are okay, and then we're going. We're not staying for the whole evening. We're not staying into the night. We're just going. We'll come and do meal time and then we're off. And we'll come back later at bedtime and see you're settled for the night and medications and so on and so forth. So we did that, and that in-between time we would go for long walks, and it helped us to get to know each other even 2 years into marriage. Or we'd go back to our flat, which wasn't that far away, and just spend an evening together. Then we'd go back. But this went on for some time, and we were reaching the point, not sure this can keep going on. We did it for over a year or so. But that's a big demand, and a big demand on time. And it was starting to become difficult. And we weren't sure, well, how do we get out of this and what happens? And at one point, we actually thought, you know, it might be easier if we either find another house where we all can live together, or we can convert our flat and grow into the attic and they could come and live with us. But some wise friends at that time came around and said, well, first of all, the money you spend on the conversion, you'll never get back when you have to sell the flat. So are you just throwing money away? And number two, you're not in a ground floor flat anymore. You're one flight of stairs up. Is that really where you want your parents to be? You could end up stuck here and things like that. So friends talked us out of it. And so we continued to look after Mum and Dad. Events solved the problem for us because my mother died quite, not unexpectedly, but quite suddenly. So we had less of a caring role there, but my dad wasn't coping on his own. And then he died suddenly, 20 weeks later. So my mother and father died within 20 weeks of each other. So suddenly that was all taken from us. And maybe God has got a sense of humour, because we decided, hadn't take them on holiday since that first holiday, but Mum had died, Dad was struggling a wee bit. It was a part of Scotland they always wanted to go and see, so we took him on holiday with us, and we quite gladly paid the bills and all of that. And then he died on holiday with us. So while we were on holiday. So that's chaos. But in a way that solved the problem, because the marriage was coming under a strain, because we were really taking on a caring role. We had to be there most tea times. We had to check up them in the evening. And we had to find a way gradually of checking with them first thing in the morning to make sure they were okay. And my mumish became more uncertain of things. We'd often phone during the night. And as my GP said, all she's doing is testing to see if you'll respond. She's ill, she's a stroke victim. She's not sure of things. So she's checking to see if he really will come and help when she needs it. So she's making these phone calls. I'll get my dad to make the phone calls at 1, 2, 3 and 4 in the morning just to see if you would turn out. So that's 2 years into marriage, so we're under a strain. So it's part of that dependence to independence, but eventually our dependency could come back in and you have to take on a caring role. I used to think our situation was unique, but in 30 or so years of ministry, I realise it's more common, this having to look after parents or other members of the family is more common, and the strains and the stresses is more common as well. So without really planning it and without really thinking about it, my point is we almost accidentally stumbled on the fact we needed to set boundaries. We needed to prioritise the marriage, and we had to have good communication between ourselves, but also with my parents and indeed with Margaret's family and Margaret's mother. And it was about prioritising time for each other, no matter how hard that was. And about being supportive if some relationships were being strained, or sometimes they were awkward, or sometimes they were difficult. And to resist the temptation of always taking sides, unless it was to support my wife or Margaret to support me. So I say the time we didn't think of ourselves as setting boundaries, establishing a working arrangement, that's exactly what we stumbled into. Established when we would be available, when that would happen, and then we stuck to it. It was a huge commitment and effort, and it kind of fast-tracked our relationship to a deeper level. Because Margaret's mother was quite elderly, although she was living with Margaret's sister and her niece, or her granddaughter, Jeanette's daughter. Still need to keep that relationship going and support Jeanette and her daughter to care for Margaret's mother, who was quite elderly and had some health issues as well. Huge commitment, huge effort, and it kind of fast-tracked our relationship to a deeper level because we made the most of the times we had together and the time we could carve out for each other. I'm not sure this would have lasted long term had my parents not suddenly died. I'm not sure. We got several years out of it. Whether the marriage could have gone that way, I don't know. If we managed to find a way of moving them in with us, I think that would have made it more difficult, not easier. So in all of this, shortly after my parents died, Margaret's mother also died suddenly. And the caring and supporting roles that had been there, because we were supporting Margaret's sister and Margaret's mother in this as well. So all these caring and supporting roles suddenly went. And it just was us. So looking back, we agreed that had we not established boundaries and good communication and prioritised time for ourselves, then maybe, just maybe, the marriage would have been in difficulty or gone into difficulty after the caring routine stopped, because if that had become the main focus and all that there was between us, then what would we have when that role had gone? So we sort of stumbled into doing our right thing there, we think, and learning from that. So it's about boundaries, protecting the marriage, recognising what was going on with the parents, recognising my parents had issues, Margaret's mother had issues, not just health issues, but separation issues, I suppose, and allowing us to be independent. I think they had difficulties with that. Try not only to see but understand and accommodate to their needs and realise where they were in life, and they were finding life strange and difficult and uncertain. And in all of that, finding time for each other, practising good communication, dealing with the emotional as well as the factual things, and trying to function as one unit. Now all of that's easily said. All of that's valuable information. But real life is hard, and I think it did put the marriage under a strain, but we got through it simply because we had stumbled into this way of doing it. And by doing this, we kept going once the caring roles had gone. So just a little exercise for you to think about, maybe on your own to start with, and then maybe just share with someone. Or even if you've got children or brought up children, or you've got teenagers around, or reflect on your own upbringing. What is that journey like from total dependence on your parents to finding your independence? Or if you've got teenagers or children, allow them to find their independence. What's that journey like, and how difficult is it? And where are the bumps in the road, and how easy is that journey as parents or as individuals? Just I want you to just think about that for a moment, that journey from dependence to independence. And perhaps how sometimes life brings you back to a different dependency again. You have to care for them, whereas they care for you in your formative years. So just think about just that growing up process, about moving from dependence to independence, and what it was like, and maybe you want to share with each other about that. Just amongst yourselves. Just pair up or whatever, yeah. It's just a little.
So you two cannot pair up. You cannot pair up. It's difficult for you two to pair up. All right. So can I pair up with you, Laura?
Yeah.
So you find somebody, okay? Right,
go on. Yeah, we've got pairs. Go on. Yeah. Go for it.
Do you want to go with me?
Just give a few minutes. It's not a big deal. Just I want us to think about this idea of dependence and independence and how difficult it is.
I suppose for me it was quite easy because I got married and that was it. My parents were living somewhere else and they were okay, so I just got on with being a mappy and being married. You know? So there wasn't all that hassle really. Till later on when they both had to go into care, so again they were together.
Yeah.
And I wasn't looking after them, so in that sense, personally,
yeah. Yeah. I was a bit different because when I met my husband, when we got married, he had like mental health issues. So in a way, when I got married as well, I could fix him. So he was, I was always trying to be the fixer. So maybe in a way it was unbalanced because it wasn't as good communication as there should have been. And the children came along, then things got harder. And so everything sort of kind of
hard.
Everything kind of fell apart. When I got married, and I was a fixer for everything, like even for his ex-wife, trying to fix one room, fix everything. And I found sometimes I was having difficulty in fixing it, and taking care of the children, and trying to juggle too many things, and things that started falling apart. And then, unfortunately, his wife died. But then I was left with another sort of thing, trying to fix my family, keep my family, trying to manage the children, make sure the children were okay, trying to give them the best opportunities I could, as a single kid. So I put them in what they liked, they could do, if they liked art, they did art, they liked whatever they put into it. And then there was illnesses. So I was trying to fix and run around and
I suppose in some ways,
when I was ill 4 years ago,
one of my sons had clinical issues, committed suicide, and that kind of brought us back together in many ways.
So,
I suppose in the same looking at we got through it all, you know. And then she died fairly young, so,
because I look back and think that through mental health, I mean, his mother had been ill, he was, you know,
When I was working, I quite often met blokes who'd been in the war and they've had mental problems because of that, and been in and out of the funny farm, you know, the periods of time, and they're always on the news and that sort of thing. So I was saying, do you realise that at the end of the Second War, when these men came in, there was nothing for them? Mental health issues. It wasn't anything. There wasn't. There was nothing. I couldn't believe it.
Maybe we could come back together again. Just a few minutes. So it was a good conversation around the table, quite a buzz, and I think there would be a whole range of different experiences and sharing there. And I think that's part of the strength of what we're trying to do here, is just bring our own thoughts and our own ideas That journey from complete dependence to independence, it's a journey where perhaps confidence and resilience grows, where mistakes and challenges are made along the way. Because I think when you raise children, you're gradually trying to move them from complete dependence to independence. You start off making all the decisions, offering all the support and encouragement. And by the teenage years, there's perhaps a degree of independence allowed, and that gradually extends. One person described it as a gradual letting go, a process of gradually letting go. For teenagers still need boundaries. They will tell you you know nothing and you've never been born and you haven't a clue. But teenagers still need boundaries, they need rules.
Yes.
And the rules relax over time, but never completely. And that is a kind of independence. With marriage, it doesn't mean cutting ourselves off from our families and our friends and all of that, but the wider family can be a good support to a marriage. So the connections matter, as does the support. The tricky bit is recognising that the relationship has changed, and that's very hard to negotiate. So that may involve difficult conversations, lots of forgiveness and love. Sometimes it's simply seeing the parents or whoever is creating issues for the marriage, just to see them and their situation for what it is. And I think we got to that with my parents, that they were quite vulnerable. They had a lot of health issues. They were not coping with me being out of the house. And so we had to see that for what it is. They couldn't cope with the separation and they couldn't live independently. Just see that for what it is. And not attempting to change, but simply accepting and finding a workaround solution. And that's not difficult, and that's never an easy place to get to. But a workaround solution that gets you as a couple or as a single person making your own way in the world to continue in your own way. So again, it's about good listening and good communication when challenges arise. It includes consideration of the needs of the parents and how they're feeling as son and or daughter separates out from the family home and makes a new one with husband or wife. So some key points I think in that is about prioritising loyalty to each other, to operate as one unit despite the temptations to go back into, well, I'm their child, or mum and dad are still in charge. One woman describes her marriage, it's in one of the marriage books, one woman describes her marriage as moving from being a teenager who told her mum everything to being a married woman who then told her mother everything and shared nothing with her husband. And that's when she realised her marriage was in trouble. As a teenager, she shared everything with her mum, great relationship. And then when she got married, she still continued and shared everything with her mum and nothing with her husband. And when she realised that, she realised, got to do something about this. It involves making your own decisions as a couple, being free to take advice from parents, but also free to amend or ignore it. Again, one of the examples in the book is that mother-in-law moved in with the married couple and immediately started rearranging the furniture in the house because it was not right. And the decoration was not right, and we have to change it. And that caused a lot of difficulty. So the problem there was the husband was not amending or ignoring his mother's decisions. He was complying with it and helping her to rearrange the house. And so wife was coming home from work and found, wait a minute, where's the furniture moved? And why we changed the curtains? And so, yeah, it's about presenting a united front and backing each other up when decisions are challenged. So we're setting boundaries, as I said, and we're putting each other or putting yourself first. These things are not easy, but it's very much a part of leaving and cleaving and becoming one and forsaking all others. Not forsaking the sense of total rejection out of my life, don't come back, but getting on with it and making the marriage work and forming your own identity and your own household and doing things your way, but still having a good relationship of independence from parents and friends and family and folks around. I'm going to change the subject slightly because it's another difficult area. Very difficult to recognise and very difficult to resolve. It's where childhood pain or perhaps even trauma has never or not fully been resolved. It may be that for whatever reason our parents or one of them was unable to give love, support and encouragement that we needed as we grew up from dependence to independence. And so sometimes in the marriage or as operating as a single person, sometimes that child or that teenager who's never fully grown up starts to dominate the thinking, starts to come to the fore and starts to influence, but it's because we've not resolved internal stuff. And that needs to be recognised and addressed. Because it can and it usually does affect the marriage. And perhaps also relationship with parents or in-laws and the wider circle of family and friends. So put it very simply and very bluntly, it's a hard thing to do, but we need to be aware of carrying emotional baggage mm-hmm. into our marriage. Mm-hmm. And I speak from personal experience. Mm-hmm. Oh my, so much baggage, I needed a couple of furniture vans, I really did. such a messed up person. But that baggage can, almost without our knowing it, erect a boundary between us and our closest. Because sometimes when we're under pressure or things are difficult, we don't react as the person here and now. We react out of that place of wounding or hurt or trauma. And that makes us a different person and makes us react differently. I'll give one example. There's a marriage that I know, and you wouldn't know them. One marriage where the husband actually gave up work to take on a supportive role through doing the housework, the shopping, making meals, looking after the garden and so forth. He had some developmental mental health issues. He was finding work difficult, so he did volunteer to stop work and take over the house, take over all the household chores, shopping, the whole works. All practical stuff. While his wife developed her career in a quite demanding job. Now that marriage has lasted decades, but it's still a marriage in difficulty. And a marriage that's been in difficulty for decades. Why is that? Well, yes, the wife sees and values the practical support, the homemaking of the husband. But she wants and needs more. Much more. Mm-hmm. And he can't meet that need. He finds it very difficult to meet that need. She has a deep emotional need, an inner child, if you like, who was ignored by her parents and growing up. They were very strict and stern parents. And children should have been seen and not heard and stuff like that. So she has an inner child, if you like, which needs to be recognised, affirmed, loved and allowed to mature and allowed to become independent and grow up. Because the husband has a lack in that area, the practical helps and the support in her eyes falls short in comparison with her emotional needs. It's reached the point where in her eyes he is a problem. And he's the source of her emotional pain. No, he's not. It's her upbringing and her parents, and she can't see it. And so she keeps appealing to friends and to others, basically to fix her husband or help her fix her husband. And we keep saying to her, no, 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 that's not the fix you need. You need to deal with your own stuff and your inner child. So that marriage continues in difficulty, and she says, he's not supporting me. he must recognise him in a demanding job. And blah, 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 blah. You're not recognising your own emotional needs. So this is even harder than negotiating with parents, family and friends and leaving and cleaving. This is about recognising the source of your pain and trying to fix the problem, not fix the blame and dump onto your partner or dump onto other people or those people at work who are being difficult or, in my case, those parishioners who are not getting the... Which part of the gospel do they not understand? Things like that, or, you know, stuff like that. Facing those unmet needs and their effect on us. May involve grieving for the child that was. May involve, in that grieving, allowing that child to grow up and mature and become integrated to the person you now are. Deeper healing may be required. Deliverance may be required. But it requires a great deal of openness with your wife or husband or your support network around you if you're operating as an individual. And it needs a resolve to face it together. Margaret married me despite the fact that I had mental health issues and I was a psychiatric outpatient. And she says, so what, I love you and we'll make this work. And we'll just go through the pain together and we'll deal with it together. And she was a source of healing and a great support in that. And she put up with all the craziness and the depression and she put up with the suicide attempts and all sorts of things. At some point in the emotional journey, it will come time for forgiveness. Perhaps forgiveness for parents for what happened or did not happen in childhood, or for friends or for family around. There will come a time to hand it to God, to let it go and to move on and to grow up and mature and integrate that person into yourself. An opportunity to provide God's love and grace into the situation. Time for forgiveness and healing. So those are my first thoughts, my early thoughts on leaving, cleaving, boundaries, the tricky stuff of finding space for marriage or finding space to be an independent person and dealing just very briefly there on that very difficult subject that we may be carrying baggage. And that baggage gets in the way of the marriage. And recognising that and trying to deal with that, it's not straightforward, it's not easy. And very often in a marriage, it's not recognised. I mean, I've just shared an example of friends who are long married, decades, and it's still a problem. It's not been dealt with. But they're still married and they're still keeping going. And yeah. Anyway, those are some thoughts on leaving, cleaving, boundaries, independence, dependence, and the challenges that come to your marriage. And so I'll say the first thought, so it's over to you for any response or any thoughts or any thinking. And goodbye to our audience.